Welcome, everybody. It's the PlayStation 5 Central Podcast, where we give you all the news, the reviews, and the rumors on the PlayStation 5 and its upcoming games. Jordan has just arrived back home. He won't be on the show today, but he's arrived back home from Disneyland. He had a blast of a time, but I'm with Vikarth, who's
doing well.
Thank you. You knew where I was going.
There you go, mate.
And seeing as Jordan's out, he can't do an impression. Vikarth is going to do an impression of a snake from MGS 4.
MGS 4? Oh, he's so, his voice is so, like, he's just gargling razor blades.
Really?
Otacon. Your safety, the safety's on. I don't know how to do him.
That must have destroyed his voice, hey?
Yeah.
Don't think I ever asked him that. And so we are the PlayStation Avengers. I've got written down here. Would you agree with that term?
Yeah. Who are you? You would be... I think you would actually be Captain America. I know you would like to be Thor, but you are really the leader of our little group.
I'd like to be... Doctor Strange. He's my favorite these days.
He's not your favorite.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
You're kidding me. Doctor
He's cool.
Strange.
What's wrong with him?
No, he's cool, but
I got a soft spot for Tony Stark.
Iron Man will always be my favorite. Iron Man 1 is still my like non-Avengers MCU movie. Like if you get rid of all the Avengers ones, I think Iron Man 1 is my favorite. It's number 2. Winter Soldier is number 1.
Robert Downey Jr. recently said Oppenheimer's the best film he's ever been in. Like Chris Nolan is back, baby.
Guess what I'm seeing this Saturday?
What?
Barbie.
Not Oppenheimer. As soon as you said it. Vikarth's a Barbie fan. I already knew.
I'm not a Barbie. My fiance wanted to watch it, so we're going to watch it. But... Oh, well, we're watching it with a few cousins and stuff. But I was going to say, there's 4 movies, Dan, I've got on my list. I texted Shivani saying, which ones do you want to watch together? I think she's keen for all of them. They are, obviously, Barbie we're going to watch. Oppenheimer.
Yep.
Mission Impossible.
Yep.
And Gran Turismo. I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah, Gran Turismo.
I'm
very
excited for
GT. We should do a review on that.
We will, 100%.
We'll do a review on that. I think I'm in Hawaii at the time, but when we're back. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Gran Turismo. Obviously, Oppenheimer, my most anticipated film. Barbie's looking pretty good too. I think that'll be a $1 billion movie, possibly. Huge, huge hype for it. I mean, it's everywhere. Yeah,
their marketing budget must be off the rails for that movie.
No, isn't it crazy? Pink everywhere.
Ridiculous. I think Oppenheimer's going to be one of the best movies I've ever seen. I can't wait. Like, I know it's hype. Like, hype, but I'm very, like, the story, the real life story of the atomic bomb has always been so fascinating to me.
Do you know much about it?
Yeah, like the Oppenheimer project, Oppenheimer being the scientist.
Don't spoil it for anyone, but I'm just asking, do you know much about it or not really?
I know a bit about it, which is why it fascinates me.
And do you know much about Barbie's origin?
Yeah, I'm a law expert on Barbie.
Oh, that's such a stark contrast between
those
two films.
Look, the Manhattan Project is it's in Metal Gear a lot. That's
is it?
Otacon. Otacon's dad in the law worked on the Manhattan Project from memory, which is how.
So Kojima will be at the Oppenheimer day one. He'll be frothing.
Well, that's how I first learned as a kid about that, because Otacon says that his dad worked on the Manhattan Project. So that I think that's what it says. But I remember through Metal Gear, that's how Metal Gear 2? I don't know. But that's how I remember as a kid getting into or knowing about the Manhattan Project was through Metal Gear. So yeah.
So anyone who's keeping a counter of every time Vike mentions Metal Gear Solid or All Stars, another tick.
You can, mate. All
Stars. See, I'd love to. I should be mentioning Uncharted more than I do, but I know I go on and on about it, so I try to hold back. I should take your approach. Just fucking
unapologetic.
Unapologetic, because it's just brilliant. And MGS you might be playing that this year, Vogue, with those remakes, those remasters, I should say.
I'm excited.
I plan on getting the platinum on all three. Is that that's going to be tough, isn't it? It's going to be a long one.
The platinum for MGS4, you'll probably
not
poke your eyes out.
Not four.
Yeah. Oh, three.
One, two, three.
Tough parts about those trophies or platinums are the hidden items. Oh, Dan, no. Metal Gear Solid 2. Dan, that is going to absolutely kill you. That is going to kill you. Because I remember the Metal Gear Solid 2 Platinum from memory. You have to get all the dog tags.
And what's so bad about that?
Every guard. So in Metal Gear Solid 2, they had a new mechanic where you can pick up guards. If you, you know, knock them out, you can pick them up and move them, you know, to wherever you want to hide their body. Picking up the pickup animation takes maybe a second to pick them up and then maybe a second to pick them down, right? So what you have to do in order to, the way it works, you have to like shake their body to, and if you shake their body, they will, a dog tag pickup will come out of their body. Like, you know, you're shaking them to get items out of them. Sometimes it'll be, I think from memory, sometimes it'll be like rations or bullets or whatever, but some of them will have dog tags. That animation, you have to pick up, put down, pick up, put down. That takes like 4 or 5 seconds. You have to do that to every single guard in the game to essentially get all the dog tags. It's going to take you a while.
Collect all dog tags in the plant chapter to obtain the blue wig on extreme difficulty.
But is that a trophy? I'm pretty sure it's a trophy.
Yeah, it's a trophy. Clear the game without entering alert mode.
Wow.
That'd be tough.
But I think the dog tags are different based on the difficulties. So you actually have to, I'm just trying to remember if you have to play it on the hardest difficulty to get all of
them. Well, I'm looking here. Apparently it's 5 playthroughs in 80 hours. So not easy. 8 out of 10. 5 playthroughs, 80 hours. But the third one, 3 out of 10, 1 playthrough, 10 hours. Beautiful.
Yeah, MGS3 was easy. I think you just had to find all the frogs, maybe. I don't know. Like,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And who knows what they'll do with the first one. I really want to play the first one again because that's never had trophies. It's never had trophies.
Yeah, I can't wait. I don't know what trophies. Man, if I wish we could do an episode on just the trophy list, coming up with the MGS1 trophy list. That'd be unique.
They'll do. They got to mention the one that you said with the jerking off. They should have one to do with that.
There's no system for that in MGS1. I think MGS1, you can't actually open like things like that. Like this, the trophy, you know, get all the cardboard boxes. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll just be basic, I think. It'd be a good one to do. Speaking of trophies, I've been playing Sifu. I went back to do the arena mode. You know the arenas that they added?
Yeah, how is it? Tell me.
It's great, man. It's really good. I wish they had it at the start. No, it's not co-op. I wish they added it in from the start. But yeah, I tell you what, man, I've lost my skill. I used to be good, and now I'm just a peasant. And I look some guy up. He's done all the arenas, gold stars. I'm looking at this going, this is impossible. I've lost my touch. But I'm working my way through it. I'm halfway through.
See, I personally feel like that is a big risk with DLC. That is probably the biggest barrier to DLC for me is you think about Horizons DLC, you think about Elden Ring. Like Elden Ring, you expect me to...
I'm having an aneurysm thinking about that. I'm going to be so bad at that game.
I like the idea of DLC because I want more story, more fleshed out, but at the same time, it's a big ask to ask gamers to re-equip themselves to the skill or relearn. I don't know.
It's a tough one.
I think for games like Returnal, it's easy because Returnal, it's just a shooter. There's nothing you need to learn. Like, yeah, you need to dodge and stuff, but a shooter's easy. But for games like Hack and Slash, where there's dodge mechanics, heal mechanics,
mechanics. If they released it within a month or two, but because it's been so long, that also hurts it.
Yeah. Sifu is so technical that, that'd be hard.
I got to give it to him. There's like 45 different arenas, different like levels. And I love the one on top of a helicopter pad and you can just throw people off into the city. And
isn't it endless or?
No, they're not endless. They're specific sort of objectives you've got to do, like take out these targets or beat it without weapons, beat it without...
Why they didn't do a co-op?
Co-op would be fantastic, but yeah, they're not quite there yet. I just hope they do a sequel.
Could you imagine if they do a versus mode?
There's so much potential for that series if they're to make it a series.
Yeah.
So I love that game. I'll always recommend it. Mm-hmm. So I was playing that, and then I also did the Saints Row DLC, which I hate bagging games, but this is just a bad game. There's no way around it. There's no redeeming qualities that I can say. Like, do not play this game. That's all I can say. Do not buy the DLC like I did. I'm an idiot. It was probably the worst DLC I've ever seen in my life.
It sucks.
And played. It was horrible.
I think Saints Row 2 is phenomenal. Even Saints Row 1, I had a lot of fun with.
How did the series go this downhill?
Yeah, it lost its identity, I reckon. It's just, it's no longer, it's in my opinion, it did a Fast and Furious. Saints Row 1 and 2 were these grounded open world games that were about being a gangster and forming a gang, the Third Street Saints or Fourth Street Saints? Third Street Saints. But, and you have to build up your gang and stuff. And a lot of people bashed on it for being a GTA clone. So I think when Saints Row the Third came out, they made it a lot more wacky. And then Saints Row 4 was all these powers. They just went Fast and Furious, where it just lost what its initial identity was. And who cares if it was a clone? Like, any open world game can be just considered a GTA clone. Like, it's just frustrated me that they caved into that. Like, I get you trying to forge your own identity, but something about being a gang and... see, honestly, they missed an opportunity here, Dan, because people are begging for GTA 6. And there's been, what, a 10-year drought on GTA?
They had such a big opportunity, man. They just completely squander it.
I know. You could have filled that itch. But trying to make it... And I know they tried to, but, yeah, I don't know. It's something about...
As you said, it could have just been a GTA Lite, and it would have done phenomenal.
But correct me if I'm wrong, it is more grounded now. There aren't any powers. There aren't any wackiness.
It is wacky. It's hella wacky. Yeah, this is the problem. And the performance was really bad. It shouldn't have been that bad for what the game was. It wasn't doing anything groundbreaking. Why was the performance so bad on PS5? You know, what was going on there? No one knows. To me, it screams an inexperienced team, sadly.
Probably was.
Yeah. So maybe the people that have played, you know, did those last few games have moved on, which they probably have.
Is it Volition? Is that they're the team that do?
People move on, you know. People move on to different companies and bigger and better things.
Yeah, I don't know. The Embracer Group, which owns that, is just, I don't know what's going on with them. I know that they're like trying to offload. They're in a bit of financial. They've gone through a lot of financial issues. They're restructuring and stuff. But I think we saw that from a mile away. Because of, you know, we saw that they're just acquiring too many things too quickly. They're getting too big. They got
what's their biggest one that they own, do you think? What's their biggest IP, biggest game that they own? Would you say it's Tomb Raider? Nah,
it wouldn't be Tomb Raider. It'd probably be, I would say it would be anything from Gearbox, right? Whether that's Borderlands, I guess.
221 games in development.
Does that sound like a sustainable company?
No wonder they're in trouble.
I know.
My God, 220 games.
Ridiculous.
Jesus.
And one of the games that they should have had a sure bet with, Saints Row, obviously didn't do well. I think their stocks dropped by like 40% a month ago. So they tried. There was a $2 billion deal they were trying to do, but it collapsed. And this was with
Well,
it was one of the companies they were trying to do it with, but basically the deal fell through, and as a result, there was like a huge loss in share price value. Like, a lot of people, you know, the stocks just plummeted. So yeah, they were trying to do a huge deal, and it fell through. So,
all right, Vuk, let's get into some. There's not much news this week, but we'll get into a little bit of it. Well, we'll start with the obvious one. I mean, Microsoft, Activision, we've talked about this a bunch. they've come to an agreement, a binding agreement, to keep COD on PlayStation for at least 10 years, it seems.
Big news. I mean, look, I mean, the only reason Sony were doing all this and trying to stall it is because they're competitors, right? That's the reason they didn't go ahead with the deal, is because they believed they could stop this from happening. But I think now they know this, they probably can't stop this. They'll just take the deal, right? Like, they'll try to get what they can out of it.
Yeah.
But look, essentially, there was this period where the FTC could prevent Microsoft from closing this deal. So the FTC, but what happened is they failed to win an injunction to stop the acquisition. And then they tried to file an emergency motion to stop the deal. But then on Friday, they lost the second or another attempt to stop the deal before appeal. So now it's essentially, there's not many barriers left for Microsoft. I think they're essentially, they're free to close that deal. Now, I think there's a bit of stuff with the UK, the CMA. They've rejected the acquisition on cloud-based gaming grounds, which is a bit weird that cloud is the reason why. But so the FTC has not lost its actual appeal, but the fact, and this is quoting from Forbes, by the way, the fact that the deal can essentially happen now means that any future action that could be taken would be far less relevant than blocking it now.
Do you have any opinions on that, Bart? In terms of it going ahead, are you disappointed? Are you shocked? Are you happy? Like, are you sad?
I'm indifferent. I'm indifferent. I think the worry is if they become, they monopolize, but it's at the moment, it sort of shifts. It shifts the power back into Microsoft's favor, or it rebalances the competition between the two. So I like that. But at the same time, Call of Duty just being on.
Well,
I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
to give you an idea, 10 years ago, so COD's going to be on PlayStation for the next 10 years. If we go back 10 years, the last COD was Black Ops 2.
I think for me, the thing is, like, Sony have, like, if you look at their IP, it's all been pretty organic, and Microsoft are just bulldozing their way through because they have so much more money than Sony, and it's sort of like how Amazon do things, where they just brute force their way into things. So I don't like that, but I don't know if that's something I should probably be a bit more objective about it, I guess. So I'm not sure if I haven't thought enough about it, I guess.
What do you think happens in 10 years when the agreement's done? Do they sign another 10-year but up the price?
Probably something like that, or they make it exclusive, you know. But I do, the one thing I do like is, you know what, Sony are probably going to green light a shooter now. Finally, we can get a SOCOM or something from Guerrilla, a Killzone. So interesting.
You think they'll try now with it? Maybe they'll put a few.
They have to.
Go for a few different shooters.
Yeah.
Maybe Killzone may get that revival from another studio.
Resistance
is dead. I didn't really ever get into Resistance. I never thought there was anything really there with the characters or the world. It was just me. I never got into it. Killzone, I was always a Killzone guy.
Killzone, I think SOCOM.
But who knows? Yeah, maybe we'll see more shooters from Sony due to this. Okay, Vikarth, Modern Warfare 3 has been... lots and lots of rumors around this game for months and months. You know, at one point, there wasn't going to be a COD this year.
Yep.
Then there was going to be a DLC. Now there is a COD. It just keeps changing. And now it's pretty much confirmed that it's Modern Warfare 3. And it's from Sledgehammer, who don't have a great track record.
So Jason Schreier basically said, following new leaks, Activision tonight confirmed that this year's Call of Duty Modern Warfare will be a continuation of last year's game, as Bloomberg previously reported. It was originally planned as a premium expansion before morphing into a full title, which makes sense. So the new game, Modern Warfare 3, will continue the story and allow players to bring over content from last year's game. Original plans were for Modern Warfare 2 to get 2 years of support. This new one's led by Sledgehammer with the support of Infinity Ward, Raven, and others. That is what I initially thought. It's like they were going to do support, and it just ended up turning into MW3, its own game. And Dan, I reflect your concerns with Sledgehammer. They do not have a good track record.
One thing they've got going for them is the cool characters that they've fleshed out in the last two games.
And the other thing is they are not designing this game from scratch. It is Modern Warfare's engine. It's Modern Warfare's gameplay. So they can't stuff up that badly.
People don't really care. Well, I'm one of the probably minority that cares about the characters. Most people are in it for the Warzone. I think they should bring back Verdansk for day one.
Warzone's sort of dying out, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not fun. I don't know. There's too many mechanics and stuff. But you're right, Dan. The characters, you know, Makarov's coming back, we know. And, you know, it's going to be exciting.
Makarov, sorry to cut you off. Makarov is exciting. That will bring a lot of people in. And if they did bring Verdansk in, that would probably bring someone like you in as well. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Because Modern Warfare 2's storyline wasn't as amazing as I wanted it to be.
But you played it recently, didn't you?
Yeah. But I did. I did quite recently.
You enjoyed it?
I did. I enjoyed it and it's fun. But the storyline, you know, general, they all know that Shepard's bad and I don't know. Yeah, it just wasn't as epic as the original Modern Warfare 2 story, I feel like. So.
And it was a lot different to 2019. Do you remember 2019?
2019
was really brutal. Really brutal game.
Phenomenal. But
there was those geopolitical elements to it. There was
you watch someone get executed.
Executions. There was it was full on. And then they sort of peeled that back a bit in the new one.
Yeah.
They went a bit more PG with it, felt like.
He's hoping that Sledgehammer do a really good job of it, but look, I'm excited. I think Modern Warfare has always been a great series. And like you said, Dan, we'll have to see what they do with Warzone. I think, like you said, they need to bring it back to Verdansk or what it once was because it is going a bit downhill. So.
And, Vike, remember Black Ops Cold War? We really enjoyed that campaign. I kind of hope there's a sequel to that with Adler and all that. So
I agree. I think that the reason why they're going ahead with MW3 is purely because the old shooters, it's all modern shooters at the moment, not futuristic, just modern. And that is the trend. No one really wants an old shooter at the moment.
So. But that wasn't that old. Cold War.
Cold War was still the Cold War. So yeah, it was still, I guess, fairly old. But everyone wants that, you know, still in the 40s.
Yeah, you might be right, actually.
Well, from the 40s to the 90s, I guess. But it's, I don't know, it's, yeah, something about the modern guns, the modern, you know, kill streaks and, you know, the modern warfare, I guess.
What if there was a really good developer behind it, is what I'm saying. Is that the difference? Or do you think it's just purely they didn't want that setting? See what I'm saying?
So,
because Sledgehammer did that one, Vanguard. It was one of the biggest duds in history for Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Do you think it's more about the quality of the game from the developers?
Or the time period.
Or the time period, or a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of both because Sledgehammer.
Because what about World at War? It's considered one of the best CODs of all time.
Yeah.
Still to this day.
You're not wrong. Well, you know what, Dan? This will be the testing ground because now they've got a time period where people want it. They've got a series that people are yearning for.
They've got everything lay down on a platter for them. The characters are all fleshed out, ready to go. They've got the engine, as you said. The guns are carrying over. So
they better hit it out of the park then.
We'll see. All right, Vike, we're going to talk a bit extensively about this next one because I want to hear your thoughts about the size of open world games. So Star Wars Outlaws. It was reported the planets are as big as 2 to 3 zones in Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Now, those zones are fucking huge. Excuse my French. In Odyssey. I remember Odyssey is such a big map, I was overwhelmed and couldn't even open the map. It was so big. I still like the game, but my God. And it's the same for Valhalla as well. Huge map. What's your opinion on this? Is it going too far?
Here's something interesting. Because they first say And this is from PlayStation Lifestyle. Now, I think they were speaking to Edge Magazine or something, but they said that there are no procedurally generated planets. And even if the players travel using fast vehicles, traversing will still take some time. And they additionally, players won't be able to freely fly above planets and will have to use dedicated bases for landing and takeoff, which I think is a bit misleading in the trailer, because the trailer looked like you can just bloody get, you know, leave the planet, fly into hyperspace, go into another. Like, I knew that.
It's literally just a loading animation to go to this, to space and back.
Exactly. And, you know, it's that full freedom. It probably makes no sense as well. You know, what's the benefit of being able to freely fly? You
also
know?
Performance thing. They can't.
Yeah. It just takes a lot.
Can't load it all. But
this is the thing, right? Like, you see Starfield, but they do have procedurally generated planets. And, yeah, look, you see, you know, I think of
that word gives you nightmares, doesn't it? Procedurally generated.
It just does. No, look, I think procedurally generated always means the at the expense of density. And I don't just mean density in terms of quantity of the amount, you know, landmarks and things to do and all that, but it's also quality, you know, the quality of things. Like in Mass Effect, obviously there were some worlds that were so barren and there's nothing to do, but then there were some worlds that were great. They were dense. There was a lot of activities to do. There was a lot of side missions, and that was great. And you know, with Starfield, most of these procedurally generated are just going to be resource hunting planets. You're just going to go there to get resources, which, look, that's all well and done. But there is obviously I think there's no quality there. And I think about Jedi Survivor. I've talked about this before, where I really liked the smaller. There were maybe four main planets you traverse between. I really liked the smaller planets because the large ones are just too big. It was too dense. There's just a lot of, you know, spending time riding animals, going back and forth around things like Jeddah. But it was the smaller planets where it was more condensed. There's a lot of activities to do. You know, per square footage, there was things to look at. And it's just, this is what I worry about with Star Wars. I worry that, I like that it's not procedure generated, but I do worry that, and this has been a problem. And I think Ubisoft created this problem in a way, not created, but their games brought it about.
It's funny you say that, because I'm looking at the biggest maps of all time based on their size. Ubisoft is in the top two. You know the games?
But Odyssey and?
Nah, it's Valhalla. Not Odyssey.
Is it Valhalla?
It's The Crew.
Oh,
according to this article, by the way. Yeah. The Crew and Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
That just says it all. The Crew, you could travel across America. But look, the reason why I say Ubisoft is because I feel like Ubisoft were is progenitor the right word? The ones who really brought about the fact using map size as a metric for quality of an open world? When has size ever been a metric for the quality of an open game world or a game world? It's so silly that I think that size is a metric, in my opinion. Where, you know, some of the best sandbox, and I'll use sandbox because it is different from open world, I understand, but, you know, Shadow Moses in Metal Gear Solid, you know, or even, you know, those living worlds where they are so dense and packed. And even something like Fallout, you know, Fallout have managed to have big worlds, but there's always a story to every settlement. There's always something to do. And I think the one other thing is you're rewarded for exploring some areas where, you know, in these huge open world games, you're just traversing. It's just traversal. There's no reward really for, aside from some quests. I don't know. Yeah. It's hard to explain, but.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and that's how I feel with these large open worlds. So look, with Star Wars Outlaws, and I like that it's handcrafted because it means that there's design intent with a lot of these planets, and you know, every single part of that planet, there's a decision made. Obviously there's some procedural generation and things like that, but it's yeah, they're designing the worlds with intent, which is great, but Ubisoft have always had a problem with making their open worlds fun.
This is going to be their real test.
Avatar,
I said this with Avatar. Avatar's a bust now. Yeah. It's a Far Cry game. I've moved on. Star Wars Outlaws is their chance. And then what's going to happen? Guess what's going to happen?
It's going to be Far Cry Star Wars.
Third person Far Cry Star Wars.
It's about density. And because here's the thing, Dan. I'm playing Death Stranding. And that
game is traversal.
You are just traversing, which is arguably one of the most boring parts of a open world game is the traversing. You want to go to the place, do the activity. That's why fast travel systems were made, right? But Death Stranding, I think about it, and
it's an anomaly in many ways.
It is an anomaly because
not many games could get away with that.
And it's because traversal is the game, you know. You know, with let me put it like this, with all other open worlds, traversal is a means to get to, it's just a means to get to where you need to go. It is just a means to get to the next part of the game. But in Death Stranding, traversal is the game, right?
Think about if Ubisoft did Death Stranding. Like, you would never get that music as you're walking down those mountains. You would never get the incredible acting and cutscenes for the most part. You probably wouldn't get that. You wouldn't get the boss fights.
Well, the big thing is, I've always felt like this with Ubisoft open worlds, and it's that there's just no reward. There's no real fair reward. Look at, like, Death Stranding, by all intents and purposes on paper, that will look like the most boring game on the planet. Like, who in their right mind, if you told me, Dan, that there is a game where you are just going from base to base and delivering stuff and building roads, and that's all you do. It just sounds boring, doesn't it, Dan? But they do. Kojima does such a good job, obviously because the story and the world and all that. But the flexibility, like the PCC, just being this insane, like with the towers and the post boxes, the generators, just being it's so creative in the tools it gives you. But barring that, look, let's compare. Think about Far Cry and their watchtower, their bases. And let's look at a Death Stranding mule base, right?
Mm.
Far Cry? When I complete the base, what do I get? A tick that, because you want to platinum the game, you got to get all the bases. I get a free tick and the ability to maybe rest, you know, maybe, you know.
Work, and you might get some money and.
Yeah, money and all that. But you get,
XP.
Yeah, a little bit of money, maybe unlock something. And you, basically it's a fast travel point.
You can unlock one skill out of 100.
Yeah, a place to rest and upgrade yourself. It's just a hub. Look at Death Stranding. For a mule base, all I really get rewarded with is materials and maybe some items. But those materials are what you need to make the game, to overcome the game's main obstacle, which is traversal, the roads, right? And look at it like this. What reward do you get for five-starring a base in Death Stranding, you know, compared to maybe fully completing a fortress or something like that, where, you know, you just get some weapon equipment, you get some tools and attachments. In Death Stranding, you get real tangible benefits. You know, when I five-starred some places, I got a backpack cover. I got the assault rifle. You know, I got, the battery pack, these sort of really valuable, the exoskeletons. You know, I got really valuable stuff. So,
but you also... You also overcome the obstacle of, you know, finishing that run. Because usually something goes pear-shaped along the way, or there's always a story to tell for each run,
exactly.
I find. Yeah.
And the other thing is, with Death Stranding, those mule bases, you can go through the whole game without even touching them, right? Aside from the occasional delivery, right? But you want to go there. Because that's where all the goodies are, right? What I was doing in Death Stranding then was I would change my build where I would take off everything and wear full armor and have an assault rifle with extra ammo, and I would load up on blood bags and hemantic grenades, and I would essentially have nothing on my back, and I'd come with a truck, and I'd just literally go to mule bases, take out everyone, just absolutely plunder all the resources. And I'll just go on runs every now and then for that. Because I wanted to build all the roads. I wanted to make my life easy in that game where I had roads. And I've essentially, I was excited to do that. I was having so much fun taking.
Have you had much help from others?
No. Nah. I've built every road.
Are you not online? Are you online? Like, are you connected?
I am, but for some reason.
No one's helping.
Well, the main benefits I get are non-road related.
Because I feel like I had my handheld. I had zip lines everywhere and I had shit everywhere.
I have zip lines a lot, but I never had any. Most of the roads, 90% of the roads I built.
Wow. There you go. 90%. It's different for everyone.
Yeah. But I do have a lot of zip lines, which have been good. But that's the difference where a game like Ubisoft's open world, it's making you go there to do the thing. And you're doing it as a chore where Death Stranding, you want to do it. And that's always been the key difference where you want to desire the person to explore. And you want to desire the person to do those tasks. In Fallout 4, I wanted to go all the way into the radioactive areas.
Oh, well, in Fallout 4 and Death Stranding, there's a sense of discovery around every corner.
And you get rewarded. I remember killing a Death Claw, a legendary Death Claw, in the most radiated place with my power suit. And I got this amazing assault rifle.
I know the same one. Yeah.
Or the random encounters where you see the random alien and you get the alien gun you can only use once. Or, like, you know, the Fallout had that living world where there was these random things. Red Dead 2, where you and Jordan were talking about you guys never experience the same things in a lot of times, right? Because
it's just so simple. It's such a simple thing that games don't do, just random events. I don't know why more games don't do it.
Random events.
It adds so much to the game. Random events,
rewarding exploration, making the players want to do activities and explore, and having a great story. Those are like four pillars that if you just have those, you'll be fine. Death Stranding, the reason why Death Stranding sticks out so much to me is because on paper, that game sounds horrible. On paper, that game sounds so monotonous and boring. What is the gameplay loop of going from A to B and delivering boxes, right? But so on paper, that looks horrendous, but what a great story it has. Because doesn't that just show that even in an open world game, story is king? Like, it is what drives you. It is what makes you want to explore because you want to go to the story.
Have you thought about the possibilities of what he's going to do with that sequel? That crazy motherfucker, Kojima?
I know.
There's a lot of stuff he could...
Like, I still haven't finished DS1, but I'm still so excited to see, like...
Everything's laid out now. Where's he going to take it? There's so much you could do with the gameplay alone.
And this... Look, don't get me wrong. Like, Outlaw... I don't know how many planets there are going to be in Star Wars Outlaws. Mm. But and the fact that a planet is 2 to 3 zones, okay, that's cool. Like, you know, makes sense, maybe. But if we're going to have 10, 15 planets, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, there was 4 planets, and even I found Jedi to be a bit too big because it wasn't densely populated. If you think about Jedi Survivor, in Jedi, the main base is really, everything else is just, you know, exploring and
I think you're puzzles. Like me. You would have rather Jedi split up into 2 planets sort of thing.
Yeah, because I liked the Imperial base.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the other area which escapes me the name, but yeah, some of this, like, I actually enjoyed the activities and the exploration of the puzzles a lot of the time, but I just think that it was too big. So imagine this game where if there's going to be so many planets and all of them are already 2 to 3 zones of Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh yeah.
How are they going to densely populate this? How are they going to make me want to explore? And this is the thing, right? Star Wars is so rich in its lore. It is so rich. I think of the first KOTOR I played, you know, Knights of the Republic. That was turn-based, but that world was so much fun. I wanted to explore. I wanted to meet all the characters, find all the hidden stuff. And Star Wars has so much lore that they can do that. They can have hidden characters, hidden Sith and hidden Jedi, or, you know, bounty hunters and equipment and wanting this. It's such a rich world to explore. They can do it. But I just don't think Ubisoft's main drive in open world is the activity. It's not the story. It's not the lore. It's not the gameplay. It's always just been their metric for a successful open world has been the quantity over quality. It's always been how big the world is and how many activities you can do, right? This is one of the gripes I had with Forbidden West, right? Forbidden West had a great world, great design, but there was just, you look at that map and there's just so much you have to do and there's just too much, right? Like, look, I don't think there's too many enemies and stuff because those were just ways to get resources. I think the resourcing was too grindy and there was maybe few too many cauldrons and things like that. But what, yeah, it's just too many.
What do you think the best open world of all time is? Best open world map, in your opinion? For me, up there would have to be Fallout 3. Pretty iconic.
Fallout
map.
3 is phenomenal, yeah.
I'd always put Red Dead 2 somewhere up there. I think you're hard pressed to not mention The Witcher 3. For some reason, I think of Minecraft, even though it is procedurally generated, is kind of iconic.
Did you like the Arkham?
Yeah, Arkham City.
Yeah,
Arkham stands City out. Even Arkham Knight stands out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say of all time though.
Yeah, I wouldn't say all time, but
also Origins for me is right up there with the pyramids. I can't think of another game that created a feeling like that.
Mm.
Even though we've just been bagging Ubisoft, that was one game that did it right.
I'm just trying to think of, I don't know, Fallout New Vegas was great.
Mm.
Horizon Zero Dawn 1, Ghost of Tsushima were good. Obviously, games like
Horizon
Skyrim.
1. Yeah.
I liked it.
Not of all time.
Yeah. Even, look, Metal Gear Solid Phantom Pain was quite barren in a lot of the areas.
It's pretty distinct, isn't it?
Yeah, because the sandbox was so fun, it was really like you could just do whatever you wanted to do in that game, you could do. Mm. And it was just so much fun. There's just so many different ways you could take down enemies and clear out bases that I think that's what made it. The sandbox was there to facilitate your gameplay style, where here it's just devoid of all that. It's just literally, it's just the amount of tasks you have to do, not the quality of the tasks, not the quality of the size. It's just, yeah, so when I think about, great open worlds, I don't know.
I think Death Stranding it could be in the top somewhere. Pretty good map.
I think Death Stranding is, purely because of how on paper it just really defies all expectation, that game, in terms of if you heard about that game on paper and you play it, you know.
And there's definitely a sense of scale with that map and a sense of grandiose about it. I don't know, there's something about it that's just epic.
Exactly.
Skyrim would be up there. There's a few.
What do you think about this Ubisoft Star Wars 2-3 zones? I've got my answer for the best open world I've ever played, I reckon.
Go on.
Elden Ring. That game was freaking huge. But
that's one hell of a map, you're right. Damn.
How much fun and how densely populated was it? And every area was so supremely different. Like Far Cry 6, I could put you on one side of the map to the other side of the map. You won't know. You will think it's the same place. Elden Ring, there were just so many different worlds. It was so beautifully constructed. You had this desire to seek out all these enemies and get all these new equipment and the underworld, the underground areas and the like. That is probably one of the greatest open world designs I've ever experienced. I cannot believe that game was so big and I liked it. Because, Dan, you know I hate huge, over-bloated games. But that game wasn't bloated. That was big, but dense and full of quality. That was not bloated. So when games go that big in its open world, if you have a beautiful design with quality, and, you know, Elden Ring is one game where you actually want to explore because you want to better yourself. Because the barrier to fighting the next enemy is so big, you go, crap, I got to look around and find some places, and you want to train in some areas, you want to grind in a few, like you actually want to because of the challenge. You want to grind, right? Because you want to overcome that next obstacle. Nowadays, I feel like grind. See, and here's another thing, Dan. Here is another thing. Part of the open world design, the part of open world design, grind. In a game like Elden Ring, they made the player want to grind because grind was a way to get over to the next obstacle, right? Where what I feel like nowadays with grind is it's just there to pad out content. It's just there to make the game longer, not as a tool for you or to desire you to do it, not as a way to make, I wanted to go and grind. In nowadays, you're forced to grind just so you can pad out the content, right? You know, think about
like it happens all over the shop. Yeah, it's happening
it's
everywhere.
It's so fundamentally different. And that's where a lot of it is what is the initial design reason for this stuff, open world? You know, is it to grind people? Is it to pad out content? Is it just to make it as big and filled with bland tasks? Because that's what it is. It's to pad out time. And Ubisoft's primary metric for success of an open world being gameplay length, it just means that they make their games super large. They make it really uninspiring with heaps of activities that are just bloated and, you know, devoid of any originality. There's a lot of copy and paste and repeat, and they just force you to grind in a lot of ways. Far Cry is not hugely grindy, I will say, but it's just, maybe it's just the initial design.
There's also maps like Miles Morales and Spider-Man.
I liked Miles Morales over Spider-Man 1, and because it was just more condensed and it's a lot more fun, in my opinion. I didn't have to bloody do the weather station.
And there's something about a tight-knit map like that where you end up being familiar with every street,
yeah,
with every road and building, and you know your way around. And there's just something about that that's really cool as well. That can be quite fun when there's a nice tightly knit map like that.
Mm.
So it can work both ways.
It really Elden is Ring the design intent behind these worlds, because you look at a game like Elden Ring, you look at a map like Metal Gear Solid, you look at a map like Death Stranding, you look at a map like Fallout. I feel like the design intentions for each, while similar, are all different. Like Fallout 4, you want to explore. Death Stranding, the environment or the world itself is the barrier because it's all about traversal. Metal Gear Solid, the world is a sandbox. Elden Ring, the world is just this. It's part of the story of the game, and it's so diverse and different, right? And it's there for you to better yourself. And I don't know. It's just what I'm saying is the design decision of a world to just be like the metric of numbers, length, and you know, number of activities. It's so shallow.
There's no one formula. So there's no one formula for any of this.
But the Ubisoft formula is bad.
Generally, a big open world doesn't mean jack shit. It's what you put in it, obviously.
And Elden Ring is a prime example of that, of how good a big open world can. When Far Cry 6 had auto drive,
Have auto drive in a game? That's crazy
because
to me.
Because they know the world is just the world for them is just a means to go from one place to another. It's completely devoid and lack of anything else. The fact that they have an auto drive where I can just press in the thumbstick, put the GPS, and then go to the toilet. I could go outside, go to the shops, and my car would just travel and follow the road and go. It just shows the world for them is merely just a tool to go from A to B. They have nothing else to show. The fact that they have that shows me how lifeless and how unoriginal their games are, where that it's just it's just this task-based go from A to B.
It's not just them, to be fair. They're the biggest offenders.
It just shows their mentality of like, this game is purely just about going to A to B. It's just about completing this task. That really surprised me that they have that. And you know what? A game like Death Stranding, could you imagine how good that, like how many people would want an auto drive? How many hours that would cut down for people? But they don't do it because traversing is part of that game. Like
fast travel and Death Stranding. That's ridiculous.
That would absolutely ruin the game. Even auto drive would, I reckon, ruin the game. But you're allowed to boost on roads that charge, you know. And
can I make it a
watchtowers?
An announcement. Yep. I think I built one road.
Mate.
80 hours.
I've built so many roads. The amount of ceramics and metal I've had to find. There is Dan in the second area in Mount Knot City and all that. I don't think there was one single road I didn't build in that entire map from the Lake Knot to the Timefall Farm to Mount.
Did you enjoy building it?
I wish that there was people helped me, but it was fun because I loved the idea of decking myself out in military gear and going and raiding bases with a truck and getting all these ceramics and getting them back. I think I just did it one too many times. That was a thing that I was like, ah, okay. Because I was really running low.
You, what mission are you on? Are you close now?
I can't remember. I don't think I'm probably maybe half to three quarters of the way through. Oh yeah, I'm on episode 8 because I've just talked to Heartman. Yeah, I'm all about the Heartman right now, so I'm on episode 8. How many? What percentage is that?
You're getting there. Getting there. There's 14 episodes, and it gets quicker the last few.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on the Heartman, which Heartman's been really interesting. I actually thought he would be the least interesting character, but he's actually super interesting. Just goes to show, man. It's the story and the characters that drive an open world game, not the content.
Did you see what Mads Mikkelsen said recently?
No. What did he say?
He said he understood like 10% of it. And he just went with it, basically. Him and Norman Reedus are just looking at each other like, oh yeah, we understand.
That's funny. I'm not surprised.
There was one other story. There was a quick one. There's no microtransactions in Assassin's Creed Mirage.
That's big.
That's big for them. Yeah. Big. Speaking of Ubisoft. So
here's the thing, Dan. Sorry, I'll just quickly say. So creative director Stephanie Boudon, there was an AMA on Reddit, and this is what she said. For now, Mirage has no plan for DLC or extensive.
For now, oh God. 2 weeks later.
I know, but the fact that they actually said there's no plans is interesting. Normally they would just not say anything, right? We noticed, in a way, we noticed stealth players loved quick saving and we decided to make it more accessible. The game difficulty is a factor. They also said, for parkour, we are focusing on fluidity and control and building our own thing, taking inspiration from several ACs. Back ejects and side ejects, as in the pre-AC3 games, are not part of our parkour system. So there's a few things there. You can only activate the assassin focus outside a conflict. That's interesting. And yeah, so they just said a few things, but yeah, one of the big things, there'll be no microtransactions. So
good news.
It's silly that this is like no news. Microtransactions is a selling point of a game.
Yeah.
But it's good nonetheless, I suppose.
We want it to be a good story because it encourages it. That's how I look at it. I know it's ridiculous, but if we can encourage them to stop doing them, it's good.
Like in any game, story is king. Like story is the primary thing, because any game with a good story, it could be any medium. It could be a shooter. It could be open world. It could be a sandbox. It could be a walking sim. If you have a good story, it will be a good game. I don't know why people are trying to reinvent the wheel and, I don't know, make the gameplay the primary thing. Like, you know, it's always just been, if the story is good, then yes, I can drive a truck or I can walk pressing L2 and R2 to get my balance while I'm carrying 50 things for 20 minutes going back and forth. I can do that because the story's so good. I'm not going to do that if the story's boring. What's going to will me to go from A to B, right? So,
No, exactly right. Think of some like Breakpoint I played. I platinumed it recently. God, the story's awful. And it's got John Berth. What's his name?
Berthold.
Yeah. Even poor guy, he's picked the wrong project, sadly.
Mm.
He's a great actor. He couldn't save it. So also the last story, Vic, Twisted Metal 1 and 2 are launching on PS5 and PS4 as a part of the PS Plus Premium with trophies. A part of that, you know, the classic games.
Yeah. That's exciting.
And they also had Killzone Liberation the other week, which is cool. And now they got this. So
I've always thought that Twisted Metal should make a battle royale where, think about like Verdansk, like in the desert, in the quarry area, but your cars with guns.
Oh, yeah.
Like that would, I've said that for years that they should have done that, but.
I think they're timing this with the show as well. Yeah, as the show's coming out.
What's this Twisted Metal game going to be? You know, is it going to be
show or game?
The game.
Well, these games are the originals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we know there's a Twisted Metal game in development.
I know. And also, Vic, did you see Exo Primal?
No. Well, what about it?
Yeah, no one did. Dead on arrival. I mean, we did say this. I mean, you could I just don't understand half the time how this, you know, they put so much marketing behind it, so much effort just to be dead on arrival, basically. Like, I'm looking, the player base is so low already, and this is at launch.
It's a 7 out of 10 on Steam, though.
That's not lighting the world on fire. And I get in a year that's been nines and tens everywhere. Love the logo of Exoprimal, but I think that's all I love.
Yeah.
I might give it a go. We'll see. All right, Vic, it's been a pleasure to be with you today. See you next week. Jordan will be back and we'll have a chin wag. Until then, take care. And we'll see you. Thank you.